The following program is for informational purposes only. Do not make any investment without speaking to a licensed financial advisor.
It's time for Americans to grow up and become financially responsible.
Let's talk about something important.
If you're in it for the money, that's not a bad thing.
Do you realize how much money he just saved us?
This is The Financial Physician with Lou Scatigna.
The Financial Physician. It's the fastest hour in Money Talk Radio.
It's also my pleasure to see to it that decent, hardworking people in this community aren't robbed blind by a pack of money-mad pirates.
This is financial advice you can take to the bank.
He's your money man.
Show me the money.
Your source for straightforward, no-nonsense financial advice.
Bring me your money questions because I'm here to help.
And now, here he is, the financial physician, America's money doctor, Lou Scatigna.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, those who love freedom and the pursuit of happiness. Welcome to today's edition of The Financial Physician, where we talk money, markets, politics, and anything I feel like talking about. My name's Lou Scatigna, certified financial planner and your money doctor. Each and every week, we upload our show at 7 a.m. Sunday morning, and it's available to you for, I don't know, virtually 10 weeks, I think. But thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day to join us for today's April 21st edition of The Financial Physician. As usual, we have a packed show for you today. We do each and every week, and some of the things we're going to talk about later in the program. U.S. drug shortages hit all-time high. This is coming from pharmacists around the country, and I'm not talking about illegal drug shortages. No problem with that. You can get fentanyl anywhere, anytime. I'm talking about prescription drugs. So we'll talk about that. What's going on there? Costco now is selling gold bars. They're selling $100 to $200 million a month of gold bars, so we'll touch on that. Donald Trump is being forced to sit in the courtroom by radical left-wing judges as they continue to go after him. He's going to be in court virtually every day for the next 2 months, not being allowed to campaign, not being allowed to go to his son's high school graduation. I mean, it's just outrageous. We'll touch on that. Why the price of gasoline could double in the next few months. That wouldn't be too good. We have enough inflation problems to begin with. Oh, the clown show, that's the Joe Biden reelection campaign, continues. Do you hear what he said this week? He said that his Uncle Bozy was eaten by cannibals. He did say it. I'm going to play it for you later on in the program. What else do we have for you here? And of course, we'll end with some woke stuff, woke craziness of the week. So thanks for joining us. Buckle up. Here we go. All right. It's been a long time since I've talked about life insurance. I know. It's not a sexy subject. Most people are not into life insurance. Like any other insurance, it's something we have to pay for and we hope that we never need. Think about that. What other product do you ever pay for and hope you never use it? Only the insurance, right? I don't want to use my homeowner's insurance. My house would have to burn down or something bad would have to happen to it. But if it did happen, I'm glad I have it. I don't want to use my car insurance because that means I have to get into an accident. I certainly don't want to use my medical insurance a lot because that means I'm sick or hurt. And you really don't want to use your life insurance if you could avoid it, because that means you go bye-bye. And unlike other kinds of insurance where you could just replace what you lost with the insurance, you can't really replace your life. And we'll talk about the different types of insurance and when to use it, when not to use it, how to sell it if you don't need it anymore. But we don't look at insurance salesmen very well, right? It's one of the look down upon profession. Oh, no, here comes the insurance guy. Remember this guy?
Insurance pro with that belly button thing, Ned? Or
no, Phil, I sell insurance.
What a shock.
Do you have life insurance? Because if you do, you could always use a little more. Am I right? Right.
Groundhog Day. Great movie. Hated this character. Very typical of pushy insurance agents. But hey, we need life insurance. I'm going to tell you some stories as we go along here of families that thank God they had it. And thank God I sold it to them when I was an insurance agent in a past life. I don't do that anymore. So what is life insurance? All it is a contract between an insurance company and whoever owns the policy that they'll pay a certain sum of money to beneficiaries when the insured person dies. And typically it's a spouse or your children. And there's different types of life insurance. There's a lot of different types of life insurance. And they come with different costs, different coverages. And what's right for you is dependent on your budget, your age, your health. So let's start off talking about term life insurance. Term life insurance is really simple. It's designed to last a certain number of years. You usually have the same premium every year. Now, that term may be 10 years, maybe 20 years, maybe 30 years. And if it's a level term policy, which most of them are, you pay the same premium every year. But at the end of the term, the insurance dies. Well, it doesn't necessarily die. You have an option to pay annual premiums, but they jump up so high after the term is over that it's prohibitively expensive. And the only way you would really keep that policy is if you are terminal and you're willing to pay a couple of years worth of high premiums just to get the death benefit. But term insurance is important because it's cheaper as opposed to whole life or permanent insurance where it has no term. And it has two components. It has cash value where you're building up savings within the policy itself. And it lasts forever. It has a death benefit. But because a lot of money is going into the cash value and because it is permanent, they can't take it away from you after a certain amount of time, the premiums are much more. So a lot of people are sold whole life policies, but more importantly, they don't have enough insurance because they can't afford the premium. Whereas you could buy $500,000 worth of term insurance for maybe $1,000 a year. If you wanted to buy $500,000 of whole life insurance, you may be paying $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year. So what people do, especially younger couples, is their cousin sells them a whole life policy, and I'll tell you why they sell them in a second. I find out that they got $50,000 in life insurance, when for the same premium, they could have $250,000 or $500,000 in life insurance. And the reason why a lot of people have whole life insurance with small death benefits is because they're being sold it because the agent gets 80% of the first year premium. And if the premium is higher, and then obviously the agent's going to make more money pushing whole life insurance. Now, I'm not saying every insurance agent is corrupt or biased or has a conflict of interest. But there is a reason why the majority of young people that I see have whole life insurance. And it's easy to look, there's some advantages to it. It's permanent. It stays in force for your entire life unless you stop paying the premiums. But I like term insurance. I've always had term insurance in my life. I've always believed that I can invest my money elsewhere. I don't need it in my insurance policy. I don't need cash value. I'd rather get a whole lot of insurance for 20 years and then renew it, assuming I could renew it and I'm healthy enough to do that at an older age, and I did do that. But it comes to a point where I don't need insurance. I mean, I have probably 17 years to go on a substantial insurance policy. After 17 years, well, how old am I going to be? I'm going to be in my 80s. My wife is not going to need protection if I die at that time. Right? She'll be just fine with the assets that we've accumulated over the course of our lives. But when I was younger and I had two young children and I was the breadwinner in the family, I made sure that I had $1 million worth of life insurance. Because if something happened to me, I wanted to make sure that my family was taken care of. As I'm older now, I don't really need to have a ton of life insurance. I have it and I'm going to keep it. But I don't really need it. Because why do you buy insurance in the first place? You buy it so you can protect loved ones if you die. You don't want them to be poor. You don't want them not to be able to afford college. You don't want them not to have a roof over their head. And that's the reason why you need insurance, especially when you're young. And a good thing about insurance, the price, the premium, is based on A, your age. The younger you are, the cheaper it's going to be. Your health. I mean, usually if you're going for a big insurance policy, there's going to have to be a medical exam. And typically a nurse comes to your house or your place of work, takes your blood pressure, maybe does an EEG, ask you a whole bunch of questions. And nowadays, because there's electronic records from your doctor, they could actually access your doctor's records and see what your habits are. Do you smoke? How much do you drink? You got to be careful what you tell your doctor these days because they could access that information. And your premium is going to go up if you're a smoker, if you're a heavy drinker, if you have other health issues, high blood pressure, you've had cancer in the past. All these things go into what's called underwriting, figuring out how much the insurance company is going to charge you for each $1,000 worth of insurance. So if you're young and healthy, very cheap. And the chances of you cashing that insurance in is relatively low, right? You're young, you're healthy. Now, sure, you can get into an accident and get hurt and die. I mean, sure, that could happen. Or you can get cancer young. I mean, it happens. But actuarially, like if you look at what really happens in real life, young people are healthy. They live a long life. You don't have to worry about them dying when they're 20 and 30. Although those who have gotten a little shot in the arm, maybe not. And you know what? Insurance companies are seeing a lot of excess deaths for age groups that they've never seen before. I wonder what that's all about. So you have to be approved for a life insurance policy. You can't just walk in there. There's other things that determine the price. Your lifestyle. What if you have a dangerous job? Or you have risky hobbies. You like to parachute, jump out of airplanes. You like to race auto cars. You do risky things in life. The chances of you dying, you're a rock climber. I don't know. I don't get an aside here. I don't get the allure of hanging off the side of a cliff, trying to get to the top. That petrifies me. It petrifies me when I watch people doing it, let alone think about doing it myself. And have you ever seen these free climbers? They don't even have any hooks or cables or ropes or anything. They just climb up it with their feet and their hands. Sheer cliffs. Sometimes, I tell you, my blood pressure goes up when I watch it. But if you do that, you're insured. I don't know if anybody's going to insure you in the first place. You know, certain occupations, they just won't insure. It's just too risky. Another thing they're going to look at is your driving record. Have you had a lot of speeding tickets? Careless driving? DUI? They're also going to want to know about your family medical history. How long did your parents live? Did anybody have cancer or heart disease? Now, how do you determine how much insurance you need? You have to take into account all the expenses that your family is going to incur and for how many years. Now, usually a 20-year policy is good. You know, you get married, you have your first child, you get a 20 or 30-year policy. That's going to cover your family until your kids are adults. Now, when that policy is over, maybe you get a new 20-year policy just to cover your wife in case something happens to you. You're still relatively young. If you're 25 and you get a 20-year level term policy, you'll be 45 when it's time to renew it. If you're in good health, which hopefully you will be, you'll get a pretty good, you're going to pay more than you did when you were 25, but you still would have a good chance of being insured again. Again, assuming that your health is good and everything else. So you have to determine, okay, if I die, how much money is my family going to need to cover housing expenses, college education, the everyday cost of living? Do I want to have enough in money in there to pay off the mortgage if I die? And as I said earlier, people don't really take into consideration how much money you would need over a 10, 15, 20-year period if you were to die. Now, your spouse can get remarried and maybe she'll be fine. Maybe she'll marry somebody that makes more money than you do. I don't know. But very important to have it if you need it, for sure. And too many young people, I find, really don't have enough insurance. Now, one good thing about life insurance is when you die, the beneficiary of the policy gets the death benefit tax-free. It does not go on your tax return. So if you're a beneficiary of a $500,000 life insurance, it's all yours. Not a dime goes to the government, state or federal government. And that's a great benefit because you need the money. You know, the state's not going to get harmed by you dying. Now, some people will, in the past, would buy life insurance to pay for estate taxes or inheritance taxes. If you have a state like New Jersey that charges 15% inheritance tax, if you're not direct descendants, sometimes somebody will get insurance just to pay that tax. Another reason why we may use life insurance, and I like to do this with people who are retiring. So when you retire from a company that offers a pension, you're given a number of settlement options. You can get payments for your life only, where you'll get a monthly payment that'll be the highest payment you could possibly get in that pension. But it ends when your life ends. Now, a lot of people take survivor options when they retire, where their spouse gets maybe 50% of what they were getting. But you're going to get a lot less because now they have to pay out for two lifetimes. So this is what I do. I say, well, let's look at the difference. Well, you're going to get $400 more a month on a life-only policy. That's $4,800 a year. I can get you a $500,000, 20-year level-term policy that's going to cost you $3,000 a year. Now, you're still going to be ahead of the game by $1,800. So maybe that makes sense. Maybe it doesn't make sense. You know, that's why you see a planner. But we've done that a lot. We've taken life-only payments and had a sizable life insurance policy to ensure the spouse, when that pension ends, will have a big chunk of money to be able to live comfortably. What if you have a special needs child? Well, it doesn't matter how old that child is. Maybe you want life insurance to make sure their needs will be met when their parents pass away. And what will happen is that death benefit will fund a special needs trust so that person can still get benefits and so forth. We use that a lot. What about adults that own property together, married or not? If the death of one adult would mean that the other can no longer afford the loan payments, well, maybe you have a life insurance person policy on them, and you could buy them out when they die. You don't want their family as the co-owner of the policy of the home with you. How about seniors who want to leave money to their adult children who provide their care? You know, many adult children sacrifice time at work to care for an elderly parent. So maybe by acquiring some life insurance, you can reimburse the adult child's cost. Now, you're not going to get life insurance when you're 80 years old in hospice. You know, that's not going to happen. But you still can get life insurance in your 60s. Stay-at-home spouses should have life insurance because you'd have to replace them with a nanny or a homemaker or home cleaner. That could cost you quite a bit of money. Families that can't afford burial or funeral expenses, a small life insurance policy can provide funds for that, but it doesn't have to be used for that. You see those commercials on TV all the time, right? No medical necessary. It's $29.99 a month. You get $5,000 in life insurance or $10,000 in life insurance. Nowadays, that's not enough to cover a funeral, but you know, almost anybody can get that insurance. How about businesses with key employees? If there is a death of a key person like a CEO, would that create financial hardship for the firm? So the firm may have an insurable interest that will allow it to purchase life insurance on that employee. Or how about a buy-sell agreement? I have that with my partner. We own the firm together. If I die, he doesn't want my spouse to be his partner. So he would get, he's the beneficiary of my life insurance policy. He gets that money. He pays my wife that money. And now he owns the business 100%. These are called buy-sell agreements. So life insurance is used for that a lot. So life insurance has its place. The question is, do you buy permanent insurance? Do you buy term insurance? And the question is, how much to buy? And again, young people, they don't have enough insurance because they were sold the wrong insurance. So what we do is we replace that insurance, an expensive insurance with a low death benefit, with an inexpensive term policy with a large, adequate death benefit. Now, there's all kinds of what they call riders you could add to the policy. You pay an additional premium for each rider. Here's one, accidental death benefit. It provides additional insurance if your death is accidental. Now, I don't know why you'd want that. Just get enough insurance that if you die from anything, your family gets enough money. It doesn't matter if you die from cancer or you die from a car accident. I don't know. I never really got the accidental death benefit rider. How about the waiver of premium rider? This is really good to have because if you become disabled or unable to work, then they'll waive the premium payments. You won't lose your insurance. Really important because chances are, if you're disabled and unable to work, maybe you're close to death. Maybe death is a real possibility in the near future. The last thing you want to do is lose your life insurance at that point because you can't pay the premium. Also, there's something that I think is very important. It's called the accelerated death benefit rider. So if you're diagnosed with a terminal illness, you can collect a portion of the death benefit before you die. Right, the insurance company knows that, look, you're going to die soon. You're short on money now for treatment. You have a $500,000 policy. Maybe they'll pay you $200,000 of it now. Now, of course, if you use that money for healthcare, it's not going to be available for your beneficiaries. And we're going to talk about selling your life insurance policy when you're ill, something that is another way of getting around not being able to pay the premium. Some life insurance policies have a long-term care rider. So it's kind of it's a type of an accelerated death benefit that you could use to pay for nursing home, assisted living, in-home care. You may have to provide proof that you have problems with activities of daily living to qualify for that. And there's another rider you could pay for. The guaranteed insurability rider lets the policyholder buy additional insurance at a later date without a medical review. So let's talk about selling life insurance policies. Now, this could be done because, as I mentioned earlier, that you're terminally ill. You want to get the money now. Maybe you don't have an accelerated death benefit rider. So you can't get any money out of that life insurance policy unless you sell it. Or say you just don't need it anymore. You don't want to pay the premiums anymore. You can't afford the premiums anymore. What most people will do is just let the policy lapse and let it go away, and you don't pay any more premiums. You no longer have insurance. But you should investigate selling it. Now, why would anybody buy somebody else's life insurance? Very simple, to make money. There's companies out there that will buy your life insurance. They're not going to pay you. If you have a $500,000 death benefit, they're not going to pay you $500,000 for it. But maybe they'll pay $300,000 for it. And when you kick the bucket, they're going to get $500,000. Pretty nice return on investment. Now, some people say, is this ethical or not? Because you're kind of taking advantage of somebody who's in a bad position, who needs money, and you're basically stealing their life insurance. That's a whole other argument. And that's called a viatical settlement. And these are all called life settlements, ways of getting out of the life insurance by transferring the insurance ownership and beneficiary to somebody else. Now, sellers in life settlements are usually over 65, but younger people can qualify if they have certain medical conditions, meaning that they're pretty much close to death. Policies have to have death benefits of at least $100,000. Now, they could be term policies or it could be whole life policies. And the way this thing works, life settlement transactions are handled by a life settlement broker. And brokers are going to submit, solicit multiple bids on a policy to get the best sales price. And they get a commission, obviously, on that. Now, you could sell directly to a settlement company, if you could find them, not have the broker in between you. But this is the process for selling a life insurance policy. You got to provide details of your life insurance policy along with medical records. If you're using a broker, they're going to shop the policy to potential buyers. Buyers are going to calculate your life expectancy based on your medical records. If you receive an offer, maybe you don't. You can sell your policy. You will make the buyer of the new policy the owner, and the buyer will start paying your premiums. Now, it's possible that the buyer can resell your policy to somebody else who will pay the premiums. But the reason why they're buying it in the first place is because they're going to make a rate of return, assuming you don't get miraculously better and live 50 years, they're going to get a lot of money off your policy. Now, what is the rate of return on that? I don't know the numbers. I haven't looked them up. So it's a smart way to do it. If you need money now and you put a lot of money into the life insurance policy over the course of your lifetime and now you can't afford it, or it just doesn't, you just don't need it. You know, you're wealthy. You can sell it. Now, I don't know if I like going to bed at night knowing there's somebody out there hoping I die tomorrow so they can collect a better rate of return on my life insurance. And just think about it. The longer you live, the less return the buyer gets. They want you to die the next day after ownership was transferred to them and the beneficiary was transferred to them. So I don't know. It's kind of icky to think that somebody out there is kind of rooting for you to die. But it's something to look into if you can't afford your insurance anymore, you don't need your insurance anymore, you need money right now because of significant health issues, then think about what's called a life settlement. So life insurance, again, not a sexy story, something we need. Hopefully we don't use it. And if we do use it, hopefully you have enough that your family's going to be okay because you had it. Now, I'll tell you a story, and I have it in my book. I sold, when I was licensed in life insurance early in my career, I sold a young couple with two little kids a life insurance policy. I think it was, I forgot the amount. I think it was $300,000. I should look it up in my book. Anyway, the amount's not important. It was enough for them. And then I get a call about a year later from the wife. Her husband tragically passed away. And it was devastating. I was shocked by it. But she said, thanks God he had that life insurance policy. And that changed the way I look at life insurance, just that instance. And I've had other instances in my career where I sold a life insurance policy to somebody who passed unexpectedly. And that gives you the satisfaction of knowing you did the right thing. So if you're not sure if your life insurance is right for you, either sit down with a certified financial planner or an insurance agent and review your insurance coverages. The most important thing about insurance is making sure you have enough. All right, it's April 21st, so we all survived another income tax season. And every income tax season, you know, a common phrase that people tell me is, what do my taxes even pay for? And I have an answer to that question, and you may be surprised where each federal tax dollar goes. All right, what do you think is the biggest expense? Well, Social Security. 22 cents out of every dollar goes into Social Security. 14 cents, which is the second highest expense, goes into Medicare. Another 14 cents goes into other health care like Medicaid. 13 cents goes into national defense. 13 cents goes with what they call income security, major programs like food assistance, disability insurance, stuff like that. 11 cents goes to interest payments, net interest payments, and that's going up as interest rates go up and as our debt balloons. 5 cents, 5 cents goes to veterans benefits, 2 cents to transportation, 2 cents to commerce, and 4 cents for everything else. So you got 40, you got 50 cents of every dollar going to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And then you add to that, you know, 11 cents in interest, you don't have a whole lot left over. And that's why when they say we got to cut the budget, well, where do you cut it? I mean, you're not going to cut Social Security. You're not going to cut Medicare. You're not going to cut Medicaid. I don't think it's a good idea to cut national defense spending. Not in the world that we live in today. So where do you cut? And that's why, you know, the U.S. Treasury, the Federal Reserve are in a box. There's very little to cut. Nor is there any incentive for politicians to look hard at the budget and look to where to cut. It's not their money, whether they care. But running the United States government is pretty expensive. Now, what I don't see here is the $100 billion that goes to Ukraine. And so is that part of the defense budget? I don't know. So that's where your dollar bill goes when you pay income taxes. And I noticed this year a lot more clients were paying this year for some reason. I don't know if it was a change in the withholdings or it's something else, especially at the end of the season, because those who know how they have to pay are in no rush to do their taxes. So towards the end of tax season, a lot of people are writing some pretty big checks. And I don't know if that's just my experience in my practice or that's something that's going on nationwide. All right, so you think you know your stuff when it comes to retirement. Well, that's great if it's true, because according to a recent report, the average U.S. adult cannot pass a short retirement fluency test. TIAA Institute, the same group that's TIAA CREFT, which is the 403B program sponsor for a lot of teachers, they distributed a 5-question quiz on retirement basics to nearly 4,000 adults in January. And on average, respondents scored just 40%. Well, that would be failure in most tests. The percentage of people who answered zero questions correctly, 19%, didn't get one of the 5 questions right. And about 17% answered 4 or more correctly. And what's surprising about the survey, the more confidence you had in your retirement, the better the test score was. And I guess that makes sense. 26% of respondents who answered 4 or more questions correctly said they were very confident that they would have enough money to live comfortably throughout retirement. Only 7% of those who weren't confident at all achieved the same score. Well, again, that makes a lot of sense, you know. If you're confident in your retirement, you probably know a lot more about retirement and planning for it than if you don't. So here are the 5 exact questions that were answered. So follow this with me and see how you answer. Which statement about Social Security is false? Again, which statement about Social Security is false? A, the amount someone receives in Social Security benefits depends upon his or her earnings during the last 2 years of full-time employment. B, a worker receives Social Security benefit payments if he or she becomes disabled before retirement. Social Security benefit payments will continue as long as an individual is alive, no matter how long he or she lives. Number D, don't know. Again, which one is false? The answer is A, that someone receives Social Security benefits depending upon his or her earnings during the last 2 years of full-time employment. No, that's not true. That's true of union workers in the city of New York, who always try to pad their overtime the last couple of years to pad their pension. But that does not work in Social Security. It's based on your lifetime earnings. Question number two. Susan worries about living a long life and running out of money. What is the best way for her to address that possibility? A, buy an annuity. B, buy life insurance. Well, we were just talking about life insurance. C, there's nothing she can do about this. And D, I don't know. Well, the answer is A, buy an annuity. Now, people know I hate annuities. I really hate them. But if a person is worried about running out of money over the course of their life and they have some money put away, if they give that money to an insurance company, the insurance company will give them back their money in a monthly payment for as long as they live. So some people do that. And like I said, I'm not in agreement of giving my money away just so an insurance company can give it back to me. I'd rather be in control of my money. But if you're worried about living a long life and running out of money, that's the way to do it. You annuitize a bunch of money. And if you live a long life, the insurance company has to continue to pay you your monthly payment until you die. Number three, on average, Medicare and other government programs cover how much of an individual's health care expenses in retirement? Over 90%, A. B, about two-thirds. C, about one-half. D, I don't know. Well, the answer is B, about two-thirds of individuals' health care expenses in retirement. You got to pay 20% over and above certain certain hospital expenses you have to pay. And so about 66% Medicare will pay for. Number four, Leticia plans to start saving for retirement by setting aside $2,000 this year. Her employer offers a 401k plan and fully matches her workers' contributions up to $5,000 each year. Under which scenario does Leticia have the largest amount in retirement savings at the end, at year end? She contributes $2,000 to the 401k plan and invests the money in a mutual fund that earns a 5% return during the year. That's A. B, she contributes $2,000 to an IRA and invests the money in a mutual fund that earns 5% return during the year. C, it does not matter. She'll have the same amount of year-end savings either way. And D, I don't know. Who are the people that always answer, I don't know? Take a guess. Well, the answer is A, she contributes $2,000 to the 401k plan and invests the money in a mutual fund that earns a 5% return during the year. And the reason is because it's going to get matched. The first $5,000 that goes into the 401k plan is matched 100% by the employer. So her $2,000 becomes $4,000 plus the 5% return. It sure beats putting $2,000 in an IRA and just investing it in a mutual fund. All right, lastly, number five, on average, how long will a 65-year-old man or woman live? Man age 79, woman age 82. B, man age 84, woman age 87. C, man age 89, woman age 92. And D, I don't know. Well, the answer is B. Man age 84, women age 87. That's the average age that men and women pass away. All right, let's take a short break. You're listening to The Financial Physician. Don't go away.
Are you currently retired or planning to retire in the next 5 years? Hey, Lou Scatigna here, certified financial planner, personal finance author, president of AFM Investments. Why not join me for a comprehensive financial review at my downtown Toms River office? Banks are paying virtually nothing, and the stock market has become a risky casino. But there are ways to achieve reasonable returns without taking on big risks. Let me show you how. During our meeting, I will determine your net worth, find ways to maximize your income, and minimize your taxes. I'll review your estate plan and discuss strategies to protect your estate from nursing home costs. Managing your finances is more complicated than ever, but you don't have to go it alone. So make your no-obligation appointment today by calling 732-905-8100. That's 732-905-8100.
Advisory services through Fortitude Advisory Group. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, a family-owned and operated premier septic installation and repair company with more than a decade of experience in the septic services. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer provides full-service maintenance and cleaning services, pumping septic tanks, repairing broken sewer lines, cleaning of grease tanks for restaurants, as well as real estate septic inspections, repairs, and installations. Phone 732-600-8721 or go to jerseyshoreseptic.com to learn more. Jersey Shore Septic and Sewer, top quality work at the most affordable rates.
We upload a new Financial Physician podcast every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. It's available at thefinancialphysician.com. We have the link there, or you could just follow us on Podomatic or Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast, and follow the program, and you'll get an email instantaneously when we upload our new program. And again, it's available for weeks for you to enjoy and to share with other people that may benefit by it. And I really do appreciate you turning people on to the show. Put a link on your social media, send it to friends and family. Really do appreciate it. The show grows each and every week, and that's only because you guys are sharing it. You want to get in touch with me, send me an email, lou@thefinancialphysician.com, lou@thefinancialphysician.com. Love your emails. If you have something that I could help you with, I love those the most. Send me the details of it. If you want to call me, just call my office at 732-905-8100. Love to talk with listeners. All right, I love Costco. I'm a Costco guy, have been for some time. I love their $1.50 hot dogs and sodas. Which apparently isn't going away. I mean, they lose money on that. They lose money on their $4.99 5-pound rotisserie chickens, which I love, by the way. But now Costco is selling something near and dear to my heart, gold. That's right. Costco now is selling precious metals. They're selling gold bars. And the demand has been unreal. The company's pulling in six figures each month in sales since its decision to begin selling gold. And members are liking the gold bars as much as they like the rotisserie chicken and $1.50 hot dogs. So Costco started selling 1-ounce gold bars last summer. And some experts out there, Wells Fargo analysts, said they expect revenue from gold sales to fall between $100 million and $200 million monthly. Wow. So these gold bars are made in Switzerland and have been selling out since they were first offered. Now, one good thing about buying gold through Costco is their premiums are lower than major dealers. And it also offers cash back to certain buyers who use credit cards. So they're saying that the gold sales are not contributing to any significant increase in profits. But I tell you, it's a great time to own gold right now. The price of gold hit $2,400 an ounce recently. I think we're right about there or just under it today. So anybody who's ever bought gold in the history of buying gold is profitable today because we're at an all-time high, right? Can't say the same about silver. And it doesn't look like Costco is selling any silver, but they are selling gold and they're selling a lot of it. And people are in demand. They hear that gold's hitting record prices. They hear that the debt is skyrocketing to the tune of $1 trillion every 100 days. They know that the Fed has to continue to print money and people are protecting themselves. They know the world is a powder keg right now, not to mention the political situation in the United States. So I think you could just go online to Costco.com and buy gold. I'm not sure if they have it in the stores. I'm not really sure. And it's a way of accumulating gold, you know, every month or so. If you could buy 1 ounce, I mean, that's getting very expensive now. Obviously, you'd be investing something like $30,000 a year into gold. Maybe every other month, it'd be a good idea to buy gold at Costco with a very, very small premium compared to major dealers. All right, so let's look where financial markets are. We're almost one-third through the year. And I was pretty surprised to see the relatively meager returns in the stock market. I mean, for months, all you heard about was how stock was going up, new record highs, NASDAQ was going up, artificial intelligence and all that. Well, it's I'm recording this podcast on Friday. I'm looking at the markets year to date. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is barely up 0.25%. So it's given back all its gains from earlier in the year. The S&P 500 is only up 5%. I think it was up closer to 15 earlier this year. The NASDAQ, which was on fire earlier this year, has given a lot of it back. It's only up 3.93%. Now, you would think from all the chatter that you've heard this year that the stock market must be flying. Well, it's not. It's rolling over. And I really think a major correction is in store for the stock market. It should never have been where it was. The Dow Jones should never be near 40,000. The valuations do not warrant that. Now, of course, the markets ran up starting last November because of expectations that the Federal Reserve was going to lower interest rates as early as March. Now, with inflation reigniting and energy prices going up, they may not lower interest rates at all this year. And the market is coming to that conclusion that there may not be any or not as many rate cuts. And stock markets love low interest rates. They thrive on them. And they hate high interest rates. So the market is rolling over, coming to the conclusion that the Fed is not going to aggressively lower rates, or at least not now. And when we look at the bond market, it shows up there. Looking at the 10-year Treasury bond, it was down to, 3.4%, I think, as soon as last October. And now it's 4.62% on its way to 5. So the bond market is anticipating that the Fed will not raise interest rates and may even have to not lower interest rates and may even have to raise interest rates if inflation starts to get out of control again. Now, the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is over 7% now for the first time this year. The average in the United States is 7.10, and that makes sense because the mortgage rates follow the 10-year bond rate, and the 10-year bond rate is going higher. Now, as I mentioned before, when we were talking about Costco, gold is $2,400 an ounce. Gold is up 15% year-to-date. Sure, it beats 0.25% for the Dow, or 5% for the S&P, or 3.9% for the NASDAQ. Gold is outperforming almost anything. Silver, even better. Silver is $28.35, up 18% year-to-date. That's the best performer. Bitcoin is another good performer. I don't know what its percent increase year-to-date is, but it's right around 65,000, off its high of 72, I think. Another thing that's concerning is oil prices and gas prices going up. It wasn't long ago in my local Wawa here in New Jersey, oil prices, gasoline prices was like $3.25. Drove by yesterday, it was $3.70. So we're seeing energy prices going up. Oil, which briefly hit $90 a barrel a couple of weeks ago due to Middle Eastern chaos, conflict, is now at 82. Now, it could very easily go over 100 very quickly. Everything's dependent on what happens in the Middle East. We saw since the last podcast, Israel was attacked by 300 missiles and drones, which thankfully almost all of them were shot down by the United States and Great Britain and Israel itself. Shows you their air defense system is pretty good. And then Israel retaliated late this week with was a pretty meaningless, I think, air attack on some air base in a remote part of Iran. Hopefully it stops at that, because the last thing anybody needs there is a full-scale regional war. And don't think it won't affect us, too. Yeah, it will. How about $7 gas? That's what you'd be looking at. You'd be looking at a doubling of gas prices under that scenario. And again, I've said many times in this program, when I stick by it, I believe there is a good chance, especially if this conflict gets further out of control and becomes a broader regional conflict, that there's going to be an oil embargo on the West. And that would be a disaster for the U.S. economy. It would be like pouring gasoline on a fire of inflation. Of course, our president has drained the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, so we have no emergency oil. And he has also shut down the production of energy in this country. It's dreadful. It's dreadful. So energy price is something we have to keep an eye on. Stock market's rolling over. Keep a wary eye on the bond market and those yields that are going up. And we're certainly going to keep an eye on precious metals that have been one of the best performers of all assets in 2024. You know, Biden's out there and he likes to talk up the economy's strong growth. But what he doesn't tell us is that the inflation rate is higher than the GDP right now. That's never a good thing. And he also conveniently doesn't mention that much of the growth is funded directly by government stimulus and other financial aid that's being given to the public. So the media is out there and the Democrats are out there claiming the economy is roaring. And only Republicans doubt it. It's only Republicans that doubt it. But meanwhile, consumer confidence has been declining. People say that the average gas price that we just talked about is up 7% in just this month, or at least in a month since last month. But it remains lower than $4.90 a gallon it was in 2022. So I guess the White House can say that that's a good thing. But the reality really is that, you know, the average American and the average business owner do not see the economy as robust. They see it as dismal. And they lack confidence in the future. And recession is in the horizon, too. Everybody knows it. And if inflation doesn't come down, where the Fed could feel comfortable lowering interest rates again and these interest rates stay stubbornly high, there's no doubt that we're going to be in a very, very bad recession. We see more jobs being created each month. However, if you're looking for a job, try to find a full-time job. 70% of the new jobs being created are part-time. And about 20% of jobs being created are being created by the government. So, you know, you could say, well, jobs are being created. Again, I don't trust the numbers anyway. But if they're part-time, low-paying, no-benefit jobs, is that a robust job market? No, it's not. And many people have lost their full-time job, and they're working three part-time jobs to make up for it. And the truth is, the economy has been shaky ever since Biden was inaugurated. And the only thing that's that prevented total collapse is government spending, government stimulus, government job expansion. But meanwhile, the deficit and the debt are going parabolic. And now with the inflation that we have now, it's almost impossible for the average family to get by. And several places in the country have implemented excessively high minimum wages, as high as $20 an hour. And what happens when that happens? Well, retailers, fast food chains are exiting the markets. They're just shutting down. Or they're just putting in kiosks where they don't have to pay anybody. You just order on a kiosk, you wait for the robot to come out with your food, and that's that. We got mortgage rates at 7%. Not good for the housing market. And when you look at real wages is when you take the increase in your salary and subtract from that the average inflation rate. And real wages have been negative for a long, long time. Real wages, when you adjust for inflation, have dropped an average of $371 a month. But meanwhile, the administration keeps coming out and saying, oh, inflation is better. Inflation is coming down. Making you try to make you believe that actually prices are coming down. The rate of price inflation has come down, but it's still going up. So, and now on top of that, we could look at the delinquencies on credit card. Those are skyrocketing. People who are behind on their car payments, skyrocketing. Repossessions, skyrocketing. You want a good business to get into for the next couple of years? Repossessing cars. People bought cars that were too expensive. Monthly payments are too high. And they can't afford it. Maybe they lost their job. The repossession business is doing really well. Let's put it that way. Well, this was a disturbing story I came across this week. Drug shortages at pharmacies in the United States are at an all-time high. And some of the medications in short supply are life-saving chemotherapy drugs and emergency medications that are stored in hospitals. The American Society of Health System Pharmacists and Utah Drug Information Service report that there were 323 active drug shortages in the first quarter of the year, marking the most shortages since they have been tracking data since 2001. It surpassed the previous record of 320 shortages in 2014. ASHP CEO Paul Abramowitz warned that all drug classes are vulnerable to drug shortages. He said that some of the most worrying shortages involve generic, sterile, injectable medications, including cancer, chemotherapy drugs, and emergency medications stored in hospital crash carts and procedure areas. This includes drugs like oxytocin, Ro-D immune globulin, standard of care chemotherapy, pain and sedation medications, and ADHD medications. The ongoing national shortage of therapies for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder also remain a serious challenge for clinicians and parents, he said. So why is this happening? He says short-term shortages are caused by demand outstripping supply, but the most severe and persistent shortages are driven by economic factors that undermine investment in manufacturing capacity, manufacturing quality, and supply chain reliability. These economic challenges are driven by extreme price competition among generic manufacturers. A lot of our drugs are made in China. And many of the precursor drugs, the precursor chemicals that go into drugs that we produce here in the United States, or we have produced in India or other countries, come from China. If that doesn't disturb you, if you're on medicine, that should. What if we have a conflict with China and they invade Taiwan or whatever, and we make a big deal out of it and start putting sanctions on them or worse? What if they just shut off the supply lines of drugs to the United States? That would be awful. The question is, why don't we have our own production facilities here in the United States that could produce drugs? I mean, drugs are not cheap. They're very expensive. Why can't the pharmaceutical industry produce the necessary amount of drugs that this country needs? And why are we dependent on foreign countries to provide us with that? Now, I take blood pressure medicine. If I don't take it, I have a problem. My wife takes very important epilepsy medicines that she has to have to stay alive. You know, what if there's shortages of any of that? And the thing about pharmaceuticals, you can't stock up on them, right? The most you're going to get is a 90-day supply. You know, my wife can't go into the pharmacist and say, look, I want 2 years' supply of my epilepsy drugs just in case something happens. You can't do that. These are controlled substances. So you can't even do any prepping for that. And what if there is some disruption in the supply chain for whatever reason? A cybersecurity issue, a hack, another pandemic where nobody goes to work, nobody ships anything. Pretty scary stuff, especially if you're you or somebody you love is dependent on medicine. All right, this just in. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly passed a bill that will fund Ukraine, Gaza, Israel, and Taiwan. It's a $95 billion bill. We're talking about where's all our money going earlier in the program, right? Well, most of this $95 billion that we don't have is going to Ukraine. $60.84 billion going into the Ukrainian black hole. God knows how much of that money is grafted, how much of that is kicked back to certain people here in the United States who make it happen. And the rest is just wasted. Just wasted. And a whole bunch, 151 Republicans voted for it. And this is a sellout of America. And then once this money's gone in a few months, they're going to come back and want more. I mean, this is ridiculous. Nobody talks peace. Do you understand that? Nobody talks peace. The military-industrial complex, all this money that's being used to buy defense equipment, it all benefits them. War is good business. But I just think it's outrageous that we just keep throwing money at this situation. They're losing, and they're going to lose. Now let's negotiate a settlement. And let's try to get some peace maybe in the Middle East at the same time. You think that could be a good thing? But yeah, homeless veterans, right? I wonder how they feel. All the money going to immigrants, all the money going to foreign countries, and nothing for them. You know, it's becoming, I think, more evident to the mainstream media, the crazy Trump-hating derangement syndrome leftist media, which is basically all of them, except for part of Fox. They're melting down because they realize that good old Joe here is in trouble. And I don't think they feel they have enough ability to cheat. It's going to be so bad. And you could watch them melting down. And if you watch Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe on MSNBC, he's just losing it. Every day is getting worse and worse. I mean, he suffered what was a humiliating meltdown in March after he was called out for lying against President Trump on Twitter. Now, in his latest unhinged situation the other day, he says Trump supporters hate America. And he goes on to say, like, what's wrong with you? Who raised you? So if you like Trump, you weren't raised right, according to Joe Scarborough. And he goes on, and he starts losing it. This is what Trump derangement syndrome is all about. Listen.
You live in the most powerful, greatest country on the face of the earth, and you're voting for a guy that tells you every day that America sucks? What's wrong with you? Who raised you? Mm-hmm. What history did you read?
That's it.
Like, where are you from? Because you may claim to be from where I'm from, but you were not raised by the same teachers I was raised by. And you don't read. Because if you read, Mike, the facts are clear. And I'm getting tired of saying this to people who claim to be patriotic but hate America. because they're always running America down. They're always trashing America. They're always saying America's horrible. Its democracy doesn't work. We need a dictatorship if Donald Trump doesn't win. I'm tired of people running America down.
First of all, Joe, America did suck under the Obama administration. It does suck under the Biden administration. That's what talking down America is all about, is that this country is not the country that we once knew. And it always takes a Republican president and a Republican Congress to try to fix it. And then you guys do the damage as soon as you come back in again. Look at the border. It was secure. The economy was great. America was respected. And then Biden comes in and undoes it all. And I'll tell you, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with Trump supporters who raised me. I was raised by my parents who were good people, who had good values. What history did I read? A lot of it. Where are you from? I'm from New Jersey. And we don't miss words here. And he goes, where I'm from, you were not raised by the same teachers I was raised by. You don't read. First of all, I wasn't raised by teachers. I was raised by my parents. Maybe that's your problem. You're raised by teachers? So he goes on to melt down even further, attacking Fox News. I tell you, it's derangement syndrome on that MSNBC. These people are nuts. Nobody listens to them except other left-wing nuts. All right, let's listen to a little bit more. Now he's melting down even further, and he's taking on Fox News.
This is a world. They give their viewers anything to try to make America look bad. They are obsessed on trashing America when America is stronger, more powerful than ever before. Its economy stronger and more powerful than ever before. So what do? They find a trans athlete in Utah. Our world's coming to an end. Help us, Jesus. The country ain't the country I was raised in. No, it's better. It's stronger. We're more powerful. Our military's more powerful relative to the rest of the world. Our economy is stronger relative to the rest of the world.
That's enough. He goes on and on and on. Oh, yeah. The economy is the strongest it's ever been. We're the most powerful we've ever been. That's not the case. We know that. But these people really believe it. I mean, these people deranged. I mean, that is derangement. This is a national network this guy's on. And he's losing his beans. It's pretty amazing. But that's Trump derangement syndrome on parade right there. And as the days go by and as we get closer to the election and as Biden's numbers dwindle while his gaffes grow, they're losing it. They're absolutely losing it. I think it's kind of funny, actually. So Joe Biden was campaigning in Pennsylvania this week. If you want to call it campaigning, it's just a clown show. The question is, can he get through 5 minutes without mumbling, losing his train of thought, or making up a lie or something like that? So I think he's in Pittsburgh. And he goes on to tell a story about his uncle, who was in World War II and was apparently shot down as the pilot into New Guinea, and they never found his body. Why? Because of cannibals. That's right, cannibals.
Back in when D-Day occurred, and on Sunday, the next day, my mother's four brothers all went down to the recruiting station and joined the military. Every one of them volunteered. And my uncle, they called him Ambrose Brosey, they called him Bosey. My uncle Bosey, he's a hell of an athlete, they tell me when he was a kid. And he became an Army Air Corps before the Air Force came along. He flew those single-engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones. And he got shot down in New Guinea. And they never found the body because there were a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea.
So cannibals ate his Uncle Boozy. everybody knows that black cannibals don't eat white meat, right? But The whole thing was a made-up lie. The fact is that Lieutenant Ambrose Finnegan was a ground crew member and an ordnance officer, not a reconnaissance pilot. In 1944, Finnegan was the passenger of an A-20 twin-engine, not single-engine plane, that ditched. It was not shot down. The flight went down over the Bismarck Sea, not in an area where there are a lot of cannibals. Well, maybe sharks. But he does this all the time. He just makes things up out of nowhere. And it's so fantastical. I mean, even if there is cannibals in New Guinea, how do you know he was eaten? There's no proof of it. They never found his body. But he makes the inference that because the body wasn't found, he was eaten by cannibals. Now, of course, New Guinea came out. They were a little upset about him coming out and coming down on their country as man-eaters. Anyway, he's just a disaster. It's one disaster after the other on this what's supposed to be a campaign. Now, he shows up at places. There's 20 people there. Half of them the media, and the other half his handlers that shoo all the media out, get him out of there. It's an embarrassment. It really is that this guy is president of the United States and is running again. It really is. Now, meanwhile, the one who's most qualified to be president, at least has two brain cells left together, he's being persecuted like nobody has ever seen before. No politician that I can remember, let alone a past president, has had to endure what's going on. Now, what's going on in New York City is just a joke. First of all, this has to do with hush money. Hush money's paid all the time in business deals and everything else, non-disclosure agreements. It happens all the time. It's not illegal. And the statute of limitations was over, and now they changed the law to add time to it because of COVID just to get him. And now they won't, you know, he has to be there every single day of the trial, which keeps him for 2 months or so off the campaign trail. He can't even go to his son's high school graduation. Do you see how bitter these people are? How nasty they are? They don't care about that. And this judge, I mean, he's a radical, lawless judge. And they're trying to seat an impartial jury in New York City, and it's been almost impossible. Matter of fact, two people who the judge approved, he had to throw off after from some of the things they said. They brought in 93 more potential jurors, and half of them had to disqualify themselves because they hate Trump. So how is he supposed to get a fair trial? You got an unfair judge. You got a radical jury. And that's the problem in America right now. You can't get a fair trial in America, if you're a conservative, if you're a Republican, if you're in opposition to the policies of the Democratic government, you're persecuted. You can't get a fair trial in Atlanta, Georgia. You can't get a fair trial in Washington, D.C. You can't get a fair trial in New York City, Los Angeles, Portland, Oregon, Chicago, Illinois. And that's not fair. I mean, everybody's entitled to a fair trial, to an unbiased jury. And it's outrageous. This is a rigged court. And of course, this will be overturned in the appellate court. Everything about this is wrong. The jury pool is tilted so far left. It even includes a woman who has called Trump very selfish and self-serving. This guy, Merchan, the judge, his daughter is a top activist for Democrats and the Joe Biden campaign. And this judge is pushing charges against Trump that are not a crime. So he needs jurors to think like he does, that Trump is guilty of a crime because he's still breathing. This whole thing is outrageous, totally outrageous. But the goal here is election interference, to keep him off the campaign trail, to keep him out of fundraisers, to keep him away from rallies. I never thought I'd ever see something like this in America. in our politics. This is something that you see in Venezuela, Russia, places like that, not here in the United States, where the opposition, the political opposition, is persecuted repeatedly in venues that are highly radical left. I don't get it. How could anybody be a Democrat anymore? I mean, really, your party, if you're a mainstream Democrat, how can you still vote Democrat? You take the impeachment trial of Mayorkas. They got thrown out of the Senate. Every single Democrat voted against impeaching this guy. Meanwhile, immigration is the number one concern of Americans, Democrat and Republican. They stick together. They don't care. They don't care about you. If you're a mainstream Democrat, they don't care about you. They're left-wing nuts now. They're communists. And if you're part of that party, you're part of that. And that's why I think a lot of mainstream Democrats are leaving the party. I think a lot of Democrats are going to vote for Trump, and I think maybe 100% of the independents. I don't know. But on the campaign trail, Biden says it's a clear choice you have in this election.
Are you ready to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America.
Yes.
Huh? Are you willing to choose freedom over democracy? Because that's America. Can't we have both? I thought we did have both of those in this country, freedom and democracy. Do we have to choose? Again, it's a gaffe. He doesn't know what he was saying, stumbling over his words again. Oh, and everybody claps like he's absolutely right. We need to choose between freedom and democracy. I could do a whole two-hour show of him just saying crazy stuff. I wanted to say a different word, but I didn't. So after one of the campaign stops, he gives an interview. And he goes on to say that he warned Israel not to attack a certain city in the Middle East.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, I mean, anyway, I just, look what we did recently when Israel was attacked.
Hey, Joe, let me ask you a question. Do you know where Haifa is? Haifa is a city in Israel. I think that Israel is not going to attack one of its own cities. This guy is so far gone. And then he realized he misspoke, so he says, whatever. This is not funny anymore. It really isn't. It's actually quite scary. All right, I need a break. My blood pressure is rising. I can feel it. I'm getting tense. I need to go outside and get some fresh air. You're listening to The Financial Physician. Don't go away.
AFM Investments' Lou Skatigna has been serving Ocean County for over 35 years. AFM Investments brings a level of expertise, knowledge, and experience to the Jersey Shore that you would typically have to pursue with a premier investment firm on Wall Street. Whether you need income tax preparation or financial planning, he has the experience to help you with whatever your needs are. For more information, log on to AFMinvestments.net.
Advisory services through Fortitude Advisory Group.
Do you have a home to sell? Do you need to buy a home? Or maybe you would like to consider a career in real estate? Well, you need to contact my brother, Mark Skatigna. He's the broker manager of Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty on Route 70 in Manchester. Mark has helped so many of my clients with either the sale of their home or to purchase a new home. All of them could not have been happier with his help. What about an exciting new career in real estate? Maybe you're finding you have more time on your hands than you would like to after retiring from your full-time job and are also looking to make some extra income. With flexible hours to still enjoy your free time and income that could be limitless, Mark could train you to be as successful as you would like to be and enjoy a rewarding career in real estate. For help with any of your real estate needs, as well as any information on a career in real estate, call my brother Mark Skatigna at Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty. His number is 732-657-6200. That's 732-657-6200. Mark Skatigna, Coldwell Banker Flanagan Realty. Give him a call. You'll be happy you did.
During a hearing this past Thursday, Senators Rand Paul and Josh Hawley, grilled Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas concerning the open border and the murder of Lake and Riley. Now, Mayorkas earlier in the week dodged impeachment as the Democrats, every single one of them, voted to throw the impeachment of this man out. But this guy's a disaster to this country. And you don't have one Democrat that thinks that there should even be a trial with this guy, with what he's done to the border and what he's doing to Americans who are being murdered and raped. It's just outrageous. This guy pisses me off more than anybody, more than Biden, more than almost anybody else in this administration is this guy. This guy is purposely destroying the country. Now, he looked very uncomfortable as Rand Paul took him to task over the invasion of our border and the violence that is coming from it.
So for what reason was the alleged killer of Lake and Riley, Jose Ibarra, paroled and allowed to come into this country?
Ranking Member Paul, first and foremost, all our hearts break for the family of Ms. Riley. Secondly, the perpetrator of this heinous criminal act needs to meet justice to the fullest extent of the law. And I will not comment on the particulars of the case because the matter is being prosecuted by authorities now.
This isn't on the case of whether or not he murdered her. This is on the case of why you paroled him. Why was he paroled?
My same answer, Ranking Member
Paul. You're refusing to answer the question?
I have provided my answer, Ranking Member Paul.
You're refusing to give any specifics about Jose Ibarra. Well, I have the documentation. And the document says that the person accused of killing Lake and Riley was paroled due to detention capacity. It was full. So is detention capacity statutorily allowed to be used as a reasoning for parole?
Allow me to assure you that individuals who pose a public safety threat or national security are our highest priority for detention. The reality, not just with respect to this administration, but every administration that precedes me, is that the number of encounters has exceeded the number of detention beds available.
The question is it statutorily, legally allowed to use the excuse that our camp is full? He was paroled due to detention capacity. Is that allowed under the law?
Ranking Member Paul, my prior answer stands.
Which means you're not going to answer the question. Are you pleading the Fifth Amendment?
No, Ranking Member Paul, I've answered the question.
That's because you refuse to look at the facts, and it's still, you know, I guess insulting to all of us and insulting to the memory of Lake and Riley and to the memory of others who have been killed by people who came into this country. March 2nd, an illegal alien who got into the country as a gotaway killed Washington State Trooper Christopher Gadd. Haitian man who entered the U.S. via the CHNV parole program was arrested for sexual assault of a 15-year-old girl. March 21st, illegal aliens in El Paso rushed the fence. You saw that on national television. An illegal alien on March 23rd murdered 25-year-old Michigan resident Ruby Garcia. Chinese national came across the border and illegally breached a military base in California. I mean, the stories go on, and I think a lot of people in America are going to be appalled, you know, that you refuse to answer the questions.
So what he's saying here is that the camp was too full, so we just let him go. We don't vet him. We don't know what his crimes are. But that is not the law. You're not supposed to give somebody parole because there is no room in the inn. It has to be specific. But they don't care. They really don't care. All they want to do is overwhelm the country. Now, Josh Hawley, I can't say his name right. I like him a lot. He takes no bunk from anybody. He's very direct. I'm sure he's a lawyer. And he really had Mayorkas squirming.
So, let me just try one more time. Have you read the parole file?
Senator, I'm going to give the same answer, and let me say it.
Well, which one? Are you going to give me the answer you gave to Senator Britt? Are you going to give the answer you gave to Congressman Bishop, or the answer you gave to Senator Paul, or do you want to try a fourth one?
Senator, I will not speak to the particulars of the case, given the pending criminal prosecution.
No, I'm sure. Well, you certainly, of course you don't want to, because it is an absolutely damning indictment of your policies. Let's just review Jose Ibarra, and how he came to be here. On September the 8th, 2022, he was encountered by United States Border Patrol in El Paso, Texas, and was paroled into the United States due to lack of detention capacity. A provision, a proviso, a rule that is not permitted under the statute. You and I both know you know this. You knew it when you were talking to Congressman Bishop. You knew it when you were testifying to Senator Britt, and you know it today. You just never wanted to cop to it because the statute doesn't permit it. And so you lied to Congressman Bishop, and you lied to Senator Britt. And now you are hiding behind the ongoing prosecution excuse because it's the last one left to you, because you testified falsely under oath. Then on July 19th, 2023, Ibarra reports for a biometric appointment and was fingerprinted. This is now in New York. The results come back and indicate he has a criminal history. So he's in this country. He has a criminal history. September 14th, he is arrested in New York by NYPD for what? Injuring a child. September 14th, 2023, he is arrested for injuring a child. What happens? The offense was never prosecuted, and the arrest was expunged. I'm reading right out of the parole file. Expunged. Nothing is done to this guy. He had a criminal record to start with. He's in the country on illegal grounds. You have falsely and illegally allowed him in. He commits a crime against a child. He's not prosecuted. It's expunged. In November, get this. In November, Ibarra files an application for employment authorization. And unbelievably, on December the 9th, 2023, it's approved. So this is your policies in action, Mr. Secretary. A criminal is permitted into this country on grounds flatly not permitted, flatly contradictory to the statute. He commits a crime against a child, and then he gets a work permit. He gets a work permit. You want to know why all of the jobs in the last 2 or 3 years have gone to illegal migrants? Working people in this country can't get a job. Their unemployment rate's high. Why? Because of things like this. And then what's he do? Well, we all know. Then in February, he commits the heinous crime against Lake and Riley. Is this a record that you are proud of?
Senator, you've misstated some facts.
I have read from the parole file, which you have said you don't recall, don't have, you miscited. I'm reading from it. It is right here. And I've just, pursuant to the speech and debate clause, I have just read it into the record. And the reason is you have lied repeatedly to Congress and to the American people about this. They deserve to know. And the only way they're going to know is if I tell them. I've just told them. It's in the record now. I've read it verbatim from the parole file. Verbatim.
I know I went a little long with that, but it's important. This is what they're doing. These people have rap sheets a mile long, and they're just letting them out. How does this guy harm a child and get it expunged, and then he goes out and murders somebody after getting a work permit? Oh, and by the way, he also let in his brother, who has 10 times the record that he had. And he's wandering around somewhere in this country. But Hawley wouldn't take any of his crap. And I can't stand that little shit. He's probably one of the most dangerous men ever to be in government in this country. And the Democrats don't care. And that pisses me off. How would you like to be the parents of Lake and Riley and hear this testimony that they had this guy? He had crimes. He had crimes against a child. Then he's given a work permit. And then they murder his daughter. I'm so upset about this, and it's not my child. I could only imagine. Yeah, this is the greatest country ever right now, Joe Scarborough. The economy is great. Everything's fine. It's outrageous. And then a couple of weeks ago, we had the Muslim community in Minnesota having a pro-Hamas rally, chanting death to America and burning American flags in our own country. Now, members of Congress were asked about this, if they condemn it, and they couldn't even condemn it. The first one up is Congressman Porter, a woman, looks like Mrs. Doubtfire from Liberal California District, who just wouldn't answer the question. I mean, it's a simple answer. Do you condemn people saying death to America and burning the flag? It's a yes or no answer. I mean, the answer should be obviously yes, but they can't bring themselves to do it. Listen.
Anti-Israel protesters blocking the Brooklyn Bridge burned the American flag and chanted death to America. Do you condemn this type of rhetoric?
We've got to get her on to her next event.
Here. Are you okay with people burning the American flag?
If you'd like to follow up with us.
Are you okay with people chanting death to America?
Sorry, we've got to head into
Congresswoman Porter, are you okay with people chanting death to America? Is it okay? Do you not have a problem with it?
Well, that PR hack should have stayed out of it. That only made it worse. But can't bring ourselves to say that. This is a United States congresswoman. Well, let's listen to another United States congresswoman, Rashid Tlaib.
Why can't you just say whether or not you condemn people chanting death to America? Why are you afraid to talk to Fox?
Fox News is not listen, using racist tropes towards my community is what Fox News is about, and I don't talk to Fox News.
Is death to America racist? Chanting death to America racist?
Talking about your guys' racist tropes. You know, you guys know exactly what you do. I know you're Islamophobic, but you guys got to go deal with it on your own self. You're not going to use
me. Yeah, Rashid, I'm Islamophobic when it comes to Islamic terrorism in my country. I'm Islamophobic when people are yelling death to America inside my country. Yeah, I'm Islamophobic when they're burning my flag. So that's the reason why Fox is Islamophobic. So she won't answer the question, right? Because she won't talk to Fox News. It's a simple question. The answer is no. And if the answer is yes, we got a real problem in this country. We got Congress has been infiltrated by Islamic radicals. This is your Democratic Party. Those mainstream Democrats, if there's any left, this is your party. This is the party you want to stick with. The party of abortions up to the day of birth. That's the party you want to be associated with. Open borders. Fraudulent elections. Weak foreign policy. Anti-Semitism. And anti-Israel policy. That's what you wanted. You want part of that. And I can go on and on and on. The Democratic Party of 20, 30 years ago is no longer. It is now the Marxist Revolutionary Socialist Party. And it's time that, you know, mainstream Democrats woke up and realized what their party is. And even though you may not like Donald Trump, you think he's a blowhard, whatever, it's better than we got. That's for sure. So Biden is toddling down the campaign trail. I think it was in Pittsburgh, and after, you want to call it a rally, I don't know, he was in an interview, and he was asked a very reasonable question.
When you drive around the area, you see a lot of Trump signs, not very many Biden signs. Do you feel like you're in trouble here?
Well, you haven't been driving the right places, pal.
You know you're in trouble when the mainstream media asks you, you know, how come we don't see any Biden signs, Joe? All we see is Trump signs everywhere. And he goes, you're not going in the right places. No, it was more like, you're not going in the right places. He seemed so exhausted that he can barely even speak. What do you mean the right places? Your front lawn, maybe, there's a Biden sign? I don't see any in New Jersey here. Or if I do, it's rare. See a lot of Trump stuff. But that's the way he just blows it off, you know, that, you know, you're not asking the right people, you're not going to the right places, we're doing great. And that's what he's probably being told every day, just to keep him in a good mood. I mean, he doesn't know any better, he ain't doing any research, he's not following the polls, he believes whatever he's told. All right, so outside a rally in Philadelphia, again, a rally. If you want to call 20 people in the room a rally, all right. This black African-American guy on the street, I'd say he's 40, maybe. he's asked about, you know, Biden and Trump. And this is what he had to say. And I think this is very telling because, as I mentioned to you, the black community in this country is really shifting a lot towards Trump. And if that's happening to the numbers that we're seeing, I mean, Biden's done. We're seeing Hispanics. We're seeing blacks moving towards Trump. But listen to what this guy had to say.
My thing is, you know, you got all these people here for this guy named Biden, right? We got a lot of people, veterans in the street, suffering. You got low-income families where he actually came to visit, struggling, but you got migrants, immigrants coming over here illegal, and they're helping people. When are you going to help American people? That's what I would like to know, you know? And then you pull our troops from Afghanistan, make us look weak as a country. Now people don't take us serious. They laugh at us. They look at us like a joke. And then not on top of that, you're not like mentally capable of running a country, bro. Get, you know? Like,
it's who crazy. Is?
Trump. Trump is, listen, he's quick to push buttons, but that's what we need. We need an iron fist for this country. Because Biden, I mean, Biden, he's going through Alzheimer's. He's a joke. Trump, he don't play around, man. He gets things done, and you see action, man. He gets things done. We don't need this piece of shit in office. We need Biden, bro. I mean, not Biden. We need Trump. Bring Trump back because he got things done, and we've seen results. Actually, stimulus checks that were handed out to people. What is Biden doing? But being weird and can't even make speeches. Some of the shit he say doesn't even make sense.
This is a relatively young African-American guy. Seems to know what he's talking about. But that's the way a lot of blacks in this country are thinking now. And not only blacks, Hispanics or whites, you know, independents. He's just not afraid to speak it. Now, Trump, you know, when he found a minute that he can get out of the courthouse in Manhattan, I mean, he's basically stuck in New York now, you know, because every day he's got to be sitting there in court instead of campaigning around the country. He went out to a bodega in, I think, Harlem. And this is the bodega where this old Hispanic man who owned the bodega was attacked by, I believe, an illegal. And he wind up killing him, meaning the bodega owner, in self-defense, killed the attacker. Now, Alvin Bragg, the DA in New York, charged this guy with murder. Not the attacker, the person defending themselves from the illegal, which was outrageous. Now, the charges were later dropped after all kinds of public pressure was put on this guy. Now, he can't even, the guy was like 75 years old against like a 20-year-old. He doesn't have a right in his own store to protect his life. But anyway, the charges were dropped. So Trump went there to meet the guy. And there was hundreds of people out there all cheering him on. See, Trump knows how to make a PR thing. He knows how to go out there, get the people going, do things that people say is the right thing to do. Going to see that guy, giving him support, was the right thing to do. And it makes Trump look good to average Americans. So the Trump team made a commercial out of it. Now, you're not going to see the commercial, but it showed all the people around the bodega, Trump shaking hands with everybody. But take a listen.
Violent ex-con attacking a hardworking store clerk here in New York City. The clerk fought back and stabbed his attacker to death. Radical DA Alvin Bragg slapping him with a murder charge.
Going to a bodega.
Crowds gather in Upper Manhattan as former President Trump visits a bodega.
This is the moment Mr. Trump arrived tonight. People lined up along 139th and Broadway as he made his way inside the Hamilton Heights bodega to meet with Jose Alba. Alba is the bodega worker who fatally stabbed the man in July of 2022 in a case of self-defense.
On Tuesday, he used a Harlem bodega as a backdrop to slam Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg for being what he calls soft on crimes that matter.
Without a doubt, very much supported here in Harlem.
I wish you could see the commercial, but that's the president that we need right now. You hear that? That's Harlem. And as I said, the Democrats are reeling right now because they're losing a black vote. Look, they're going to get the majority of it. But I think Trump got like 15% last time. Right now, it's polling something like 25 to 30%. Maybe even more by the time the election comes around. The Democrats can't afford to lose that vote. Okay, and what could only be described as an ominous warning from the FBI. They came out and said this week that Chinese hackers are preparing to launch a major attack on critical U.S. infrastructure and have already infiltrated multiple companies, according to the FBI. FBI Director Chris Wray revealed today, well, whatever day that was that he revealed, China is developing the capability to cause significant damage to our critical infrastructure at a time of their choosing. The only question is a time to launch a catastrophic blow. Wow. Have you done any preparing? You got some food? You got some water? China is developing the ability to physically wreak havoc on our critical infrastructure at a time of its choosing, Ray said at a 2024 Vanderbilt summit on modern conflict. Its plan is to land low blows against civilian infrastructure to try to induce panic. According to Ray, an ongoing Chinese hacking campaign known as Volt Typhoon has successfully infiltrated several American companies in telecommunications, energy, water, and other critical sectors. 23 pipeline operators are being targeted. Boy, that's pretty scary stuff. Ray went on to note that China's hackers operated a series of botnets, which are constellations of compromised personal computers and servers around the globe to hide their nefarious cyber actions. So what are they going to do? Turn off our electrical grid? Stop our pipelines? Shut down our banking systems, telecommunications? Maybe the operation's already underway. We've seen all kinds of disruptions, haven't we, in the last few weeks, involving 911 emergency numbers in four states. Cell service from AT&T and Verizon went down in certain areas of the country. Some are saying that the collapse of the Key Bridge in Baltimore was a strategic attack on critical U.S. infrastructure. And we don't know. Haven't heard much more out of that. But do you remember investigative journalist Laura Logan revealed that she had reliable intelligence sources that said it was an attack, an absolute brilliant strategic attack? You know, this is a very strategic roadway that's out of commission for a long time. So scary stuff. The question is, when do they pull the trigger on it? All right, if this is not an example of our educational system being taken over by woke radicals, listen to this story. A 16-year-old high school student in North Carolina was suspended for 3 days after using the term illegal alien during a vocabulary assignment in his English class. Lee McGee, the boy's mother, says her son was assigned vocabulary words during class last Tuesday, which included the word alien. When her son asked, like space aliens or illegal aliens without green cards, another student in the class took offense and threatened to kick his ass, prompting the teacher to call in the assistant principal. School administrators at Central Davison High School in Lexington deemed his words offensive and disrespectful to classmates who are Hispanic. The kid went on to say, I didn't make a statement directed towards anyone. I asked a question. I wasn't speaking of Hispanics because everyone from other countries need green cards. And the term illegal alien is an actual term that I hear on the news and could find in the dictionary. According to the report, the boy's record could now be damaged as he aims to secure an academic scholarship for college. He currently participates in school clubs, track, and cross country. Because of his question, our son was disciplined and given 3 days out of school because of racism, his mother wrote in an email shared with the journal. He is devastated and concerned that the racism level on his school record will harm his future goal of receiving a track scholarship. We are concerned that he will fall behind in his classes due to being absent for three consecutive days. And the assistant principal so far has refused to remove the infraction from her son's record. So now they got an attorney, and they're going to have to sue the district. It's so unnecessary. I mean, you can't use the term illegal alien now. Now they're controlling your speech. They're controlling your thoughts. The only way you'd be offended by the term illegal alien if you're here illegally. But we got to protect them, you know. So we'll see what happens with that. Or how about this thing? This is crazy. Again, another example of our educational system out of control. Did you hear about this story? Dozens of Utah middle schoolers and their parents stage a walkout Wednesday to protest their district allowing so-called student furries to bite, bark, and pounce on their peers. You know, a furry apparently is people who dress up in animal costumes, like cartoon animals, and they're able to go to school like that. And apparently they're causing all kinds of problems at school, and the students and their parents staged a demonstration outside the school. It just gets stranger by the day, doesn't it? Now, they say that, look, it's just like a cosplay kind of thing. You know, we don't really think we're animals. You know, we just like to look like them and play like them. But the school, they allow this to happen. And the people are like, hey, I'm trying to go to school to learn something. Not to have to deal with somebody dressed up like a little doggy biting me or scratching me or something. Insanity. On Friday, the Biden regime proudly announced that women will be forced to allow men in their locker rooms and bathrooms with a new 1,577-page Title IX ruling. Women will be forced to compete against men. And women will be forced to accept men on their sports teams. Women and young girls will be forced to share locker rooms and bathrooms based on gender identity rather than biological sex. This is outrageous. This impacts girls as young as kindergarten. Boy, I'm so glad I don't have young kids in school, especially young girls now. Preferred pronouns now are also going to be mandated. Even the single use of the wrong pronoun can require discipline to a teacher or a sports coach. So these new rules now cement protections for LGBTQ LMNOP students under federal law. And it also reverses Trump-era policies, including one that protects women by dictating how schools should respond to cases of alleged sexual misconduct in K-12 schools and college campuses. War against women. Where are the women? Where are the feminists? These new rules take effect August 1st. And there's significant penalties. If you don't follow this ruling. This is basically every school in the country will have to follow this now. It's unbelievable. Really, it's everything is unbelievable these days. What this administration, this regime, this whatever you want to call it, and whoever is running it, is doing everything they can to destroy America. And I'm just surprised there's not more pushback than we already have. But I think it's getting close to the breaking point where people are going to say, I've had enough. And I think we're at peak wokeness right now. I think it's all downhill from here. But I'm telling you, if I had a girl in sports, a young girl, and this ruling comes out, I'm pissed, and I may have to pull my daughter out of sports because I'm not having her wrestle a guy. I'm not having her play basketball with a 6-foot tall man. I'm not going to have a racetrack against a guy. And I certainly don't want her to be in a locker room feeling intimidated and uncomfortable because a guy who professes to be a girl wants to hang out and see the naked girls. It's just the opposite of common sense. I mean, really. And that's what makes it so absurd, all these things, is that it's just the opposite of common sense. Where has common sense gone in this country? It's quite astounding, actually. You're seeing things now that just 5 years ago you never would think was possible. And you just when you think it's absurd enough, it gets more absurd. Quite unbelievable. Last week, anti-Israel protesters shut down the Golden Gate Bridge in both directions for 4 hours. And I think 26 of them were arrested, and they were all released without charges. Could you imagine being in that traffic jam on that bridge for 4 hours, trying to get to work, trying to get home to maybe a sick relative? I would just tell the first three cars, just keep moving slowly. You just keep going and keep going. Either they get out of my way or I run them over. They're going to put themselves in harm's way and put them right in themselves in the middle of the highway. Look, they get what they get. I'm surprised more drivers don't do that because they know they're going to be charged with murder. But these people get out scot-free. Right? No ramifications to this. They should have sent in a SWAT team and dragged these people by their hair into a truck and then drove them off. But no, it's an anti-Israel thing, pro-Hamas, so that's okay. Imagine if those were Trump supporters in San Francisco. Or a conservative group? Or an anti-abortion group? I wonder what would happen to them if they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge. I doubt that they'd be released without any charges. I doubt it. I think that'll do it for today. Thanks so much for joining us for today's The Financial Physician Podcast. You want to get in touch with me? My email is lou@thefinancialphysician.com. Please share the podcast if you enjoyed it with friends and family. And if you want to make a no-obligation financial appointment with me, simply call 732-905-8100. That's 732-905-8100. Have a wonderful week. And until next time, never forget, I'm not far right. I'm just right so far.